There will be no personal nor direct attacks on anyone. And I would ask that you please try to keep down the loud cheering and the clapping. There will be no booing and no unruly behavior. With that,
this is painful, and it will be for a long time.
Donald Trump, baby! That's right, this man knows what's up!
After all, these are a couple of high-stepping turkeys, and you know what to say about a high-stepper. No step too high for a high-stepper.
This is Midday Mobile with Sean Sullivan on FM Talk 106.5.
Well, Sean's a tough guy. I mean, I think everybody knows that. You know, Sean, he took some licks. He hangs in there.
Yeah, what's wrong with the beer we got? I mean, the beer we got drank pretty good, don't it?
Did you hear what I said?
So this is a brave council. I had no doubt about them.
That doesn't suck.
If you don't like it, too bad.
Last question. Were you high on drugs?
Last question. Kiss my...
Yes, welcome back to the second hour of Midday Mobile. This is Yaffe filling in for Sean once again. Usually you can hear me in Huntsville, as I've told you before, but I'll just remind you once again. You can hear me in Huntsville 9 to 11 a.m. on the Yaffe program on News Talk 770 AM 92.5 FM WVNN. But it is an honor, it is a privilege to be able to talk to the audience in Mobile. I'm fairly new to Alabama, moved a little less than a year ago, and have loved this state ever since. I'm really glad I'm here and been able to go to different cities and talk to different places around the state, now including Mobile. So in the first hour, I started the show off talking about how the technocrats are just ruining everything. That the technocrats, like Sheldon on the Big Bang Theory, go listen to the podcast of the first hour if you missed it. I thought it was a good analogy. Hopefully you all did as well. But the technocrats, the experts that we're all supposed to follow, how they look at things through a narrow lens, often don't look at the big picture, often don't have common sense, and it causes problems. And we're seeing that with the reaction of the pandemic. The CDC is going back and forth with masking, vaccinations, all of this stuff. It just gets confusing and it lacks real common sense. They don't know how to look at the big picture. So I talked about that, but you know, it's not just affecting us in terms of the pandemic. It's also affecting us right now in terms of the economy. The technocrats are they're ruining the American economy in a lot of ways. Now, an example of this I have is when it comes to the Federal Reserve, when it comes to what's going on there, because the Federal Reserve, and of course, Janet Yellen, the Treasury Secretary, who used to be the Fed Chairman, they were convinced, they told us, the smartest among us, remember, they're the experts, the technocrats, who run a lot of the economy. They told us that inflation, it's just transitory. It's not really going to be a big picture, a big problem in the future, just right now as we come out of the pandemic. Transitory. And people like me is like, what y'all are doing, what the Democrats are doing with the economy, it's going to be more than transitory, and this just takes common sense to see. Well, Dalton, if you can you grab the audio of Jerome Powell, the current Fed chairman? He spoke about inflation yesterday, and all of a sudden he has a little bit of a different tune on this. Go ahead and play that for me, Dalton.
The process of reopening the economy is unprecedented, as was the shutdown at the onset of the pandemic. As the reopening continues, bottlenecks, hiring difficulties, and other constraints could continue to limit how quickly supply can adjust, raising the possibility that inflation could turn out to be higher and more persistent than we expect.
Wait. What? So now inflation could be higher and more persistent than we expected. I thought this was just transitory. Now, part of this, I think, is political. Because all of a sudden last week, I don't know if you noticed, but Biden and the Democrats were trying to convince us that by passing this massive spending bill they want to do, plus the infrastructure bill that they want to do, all this massive spending would actually reduce inflation. It's magic. Remember when Joe Biden said it three times you know, when he was talking at that CNN town hall, reduce inflation. And I'm like, is he trying to cast a spell on the economy? Is he think saying it three times will cast a spell and that'll all of a sudden magically make inflation go away? No. But see, the technocrats warned, they told us this wasn't going to happen. And now it's happening, and they're like, you know, it's hard to predict. More than expected. I expected it. I totally expected it. I don't have a PhD in economics. I am not the chairman of the Fed. I'm not the so-called expert, but I can look at reality. I can look at the big picture. I can look at common sense and show you that when you just dump trillions of dollars into the economy, a lot of that money going to people not working, encouraging them not to work, then you have supply issues along with that because you shut down the economy, and you're still encouraging lots of people not to work, and you want to spend even more money, of course it's going to cause inflation. And eventually it's going to hurt economic growth, and eventually you could have stagflation like we had in the 70s, high unemployment, high inflation, which will mean high interest rates. And that'll be fun when we try to pay off the debt with high interest rates. But the thing is, they were the experts. They told us they knew. They're smarter than us. And I'm like, this is so unexpected. Like when jobs didn't grow as much, this is so unexpected. I'm not surprised. Why would anybody be surprised at this? Why? They constantly try to convince me that things are surprising when I'm not surprised. So on that note, though, we now have Republicans in Congress, in the Senate, still trying to pass some kind of giant bipartisan infrastructure deal. Yes, we got the bipartisan infrastructure deal. Now, apparently they've come to a new deal. Trump had an interesting comment. Former President Trump, not happy about this, and I think he's right here. He said, under the weak leadership of Mitch McConnell, Senate Republicans continue to lose. He lost Arizona, he lost Georgia, he ignored election fraud, and he doesn't fight. Okay, that doesn't have to do with this, whatever, that's a whole other thing. But he also said now he's giving Democrats everything they want and getting nothing in return. No deal is better than a bad deal. Fight for America, not for special interests and radical Democrats. Rhinos are ruining America right alongside communist Democrats. Now, it's typical Trump hyperbole rhetoric and all that stuff, but he makes a point here. So Nancy Pelosi and Chuck Schumer have said that they want a bipartisan infrastructure deal passed alongside another $1 trillion spending package through reconciliation by Democrats. And Nancy Pelosi said she will not have one without the other. And Chuck Schumer has basically said the same thing. And Joe Biden has basically said the same thing in the past. So tell me, why in the world are Republicans still on board with this bipartisan infrastructure deal? Why? Why? We're being played. They're totally being played. Now, Mitch McConnell actually spoke on this yesterday. He was on Kudlow on Fox Business. Dalton, can you play that Mitch McConnell cut that I sent you for me? This is Mitch McConnell talking about all of this yesterday. Here it is.
What I can say that you're wrong about is that it will be attached to what we anticipate coming next, which is the Democrats' reckless taxing and spending spree, which would be horrible for the country. I think we all agree an infrastructure package done correctly is a plus for the country. President Trump and the administration you were a part of was trying to figure a way to do that. President Obama talked about it as well. But I can tell you there will be two separate efforts here, and all Republicans are going to oppose the reckless taxing and spending spree, which amounts to at least, they claim, $3.5 trillion. You claim, and you're probably more accurate, a lot more than that. If this bill never comes together on infrastructure, what they will do is simply take their version of infrastructure and add it to the reckless taxing and spending spree. So I don't care what Nancy Pelosi says. In the Senate, there are two separate proposals.
Yes, Mitch. There are two separate proposals. The problem is, it's basically just one thing. Technically, you're right. There are two separate proposals. There's the bipartisan deal, but the Democrats have already said that whatever they can't get in the bipartisan deal, they will shove through reconciliation. Massive spending package that way. So I don't, we're being played. And they don't realize it. They don't realize it, which is, I don't know. I mean, maybe he does realize it. Now, why is he doing this? Why is he doing this? Because this is the problem with too many Republicans in the Senate and Congress. They want to be able to go back to their district, or they want to be able to go back to their state and talk about how they worked out all of these goodies for your state. So they figure, look, if they're going to spend all this money anyway, we should at least be able to take credit for some of it. So even though it doesn't really matter what we do, because they're going to spend what they want anyway, which is the result here, they want to be able to go back to the states and say they were at least a part of it. We got you all these goodies. Now vote for me. Yay. This is the typical political stuff. That is the thinking of Mitch McConnell. That is the thinking from these Republican senators. Plus, they want to say they worked on bipartisanship because that seems cool to them or something. I don't know. So they did something, they said, on a so-called bipartisan basis, and they think they're being good, but they're really just being played by Democrats, because Democrats are going to get everything they want out of this anyway. So they have the goodies. Now, what they should be doing is going back to their state, going back to their district, talk only about how spending is out of control. Only about how Democrat spending is out of control, only about inflation, only about reducing the debt and deficit, and voting against all of this, not playing their game, not even trying to play their game. And they'll probably win big if they do that. Right now, it looks like Republicans are already going to win big in 2022. This will continue on, but they're instead caving to Democrats. So Democrats are going to get all of they want. They're going to hurt the economy anymore. Part of this is about transforming the economy. Also, a couple of Republicans can go back to their state and go back to their district and say, look at the goodies I got for you. And at the same time, complain about, they want it both ways. They think this is the best way to get the best of both worlds. They want to complain about Democrat spending, but also get credit for some goodies that you're giving to your state. And they're hoping that you will fall for it. That's the thing. They're hoping that you will fall for it. They're trying to play you. I don't like being played. I don't think this is fall foring. Any Republican, I've said this before, I'll say it again. Any Republican that votes for this bipartisan infrastructure deal, knowing what Democrats are going to do on the other side of it, is a fool. Is a fool. You're a fool if you do this. I don't care what your real politique or whatever your strategy is to get reelected is, it's a fool. Because spending is out of control. Inflation's going to get worse. It's going to hurt the economy overall. All of this is already hurting productivity, and there's no reason for it. The infrastructure is not crumbling. You know, I brought it up this point. I'll bring it up again. They already spend billions of dollars on infrastructure projects every year through the normal appropriations process. We're seeing it here in Alabama, redoing some airports based on infrastructure projects. This idea that the infrastructure is crumbling, that we have not invested in infrastructure at all, is not true. So this is all just about politics, all about shoving something down our throats before the midterms. And Republicans want the best of both worlds. But by trying to do it this way, through the best of both worlds, they are not standing up for something. They're not standing up on principle here. And you wonder why Trump won a few years ago. 251-343-0106, 251-343-0106. You can call in, you can text as well. We have one texter that says, dude, you are a complete moron if you don't think infrastructure is in trouble. I really don't want to go through all the stats on this again with the whole infrastructure's in trouble stuff. I could go over some of the stats. I'm not against. I've done that before. Whatever. I'm not saying infrastructure projects are bad. I'm saying it should be done through the normal appropriation process, and we don't need to do it through some giant spending bill. And no, it's not crumbling, except in a lot of Democrat areas. You're listening to Yaffe filling in for Sean Sullivan on Midday Mobile on FM Talk 106.5.
This is Midday Mobile with Sean Sullivan on FM Talk 106.5.
Welcome back to Midday Mobile. This is Yaffe filling in for Sean Sullivan here on FM Talk 106.5. Really glad to be here. Usually you can hear me on WVNN in Huntsville. By the way, if you want to find out more about me, it's pretty easy. Just follow me on social media. I'm always posting stuff on Twitter, always posting stuff on the Facebook page. Just follow me on Twitter at Michael Yaffe, spelled Y-A-F-F-E-E, because it is my last name. Or like the Yaffe Facebook page as well. I'd really appreciate it. You can subscribe to my podcast. It shows up on the social media and all of that stuff. Really glad to be here. At the bottom of the hour, we're going to speak with Cameron Smith. He is with AL.com. You know, he's a columnist with AL.com. One of the sole conservative columnists on that crazy lefty site. So we're going to bring him on because he wrote a column recently about liberty versus vaccine mandates, and there's no vaccine for liberty. And he got some pushback, of course, by the left, and he's gotten some hate on that. And I think it's pretty interesting, actually. And we got to talk about mask mandates. He also has a piece recently on a separate issue on dementia that we can talk about as well. So Cameron Smith's going to join me at the bottom of the hour. So real quick, though, I do want to mention, because another thing that is going on right now is that January 6th commission. We have Liz Cheney and Adam Kinzinger, so-called Republicans, joining Democrats. And this is all about trying to be, you know, this is all push against Trump. That's all this is about. But real quick, Dalton, can you play for me the Jim Jordan cut I sent you, because he was on Fox News yesterday, and I thought he brought a really good point. This is why he needs to be on the committee. I don't feel like this is a bad question. Really, I don't. Here's what he said. Go on, play for me, Dalton.
Look, what happened to these guys never should have happened. They needed backup there. These guys risk their lives. They protect us. They protect you and everyone else when we're around Capitol Hill. So they should have had help. They should have had more National Guard or more police there. Why didn't they? Why did the reports have surfaced that said that before January 6th, Speaker Pelosi vetoed having the National Guard? Press reports said that. Press reports said on January 6th that Speaker Pelosi hesitated in calling up the National Guard. Why? That's a fundamental question that needs to be answered. It seems to be the one question that Benny Thompson has kept off the table. They're not going to address that. My hunch is, Trace, the reason they couldn't have more police presence here to protect those guys and protect us is because what did they do all last summer? They talked about defunding the police. They raised money to bail out rioters who attack police. And so when you talk about defunding the police and supporting people who attack police, it's kind of tough to call up more of them to protect yourself on January 6th. But they're not going to address that question. They're just going to go after President Trump.
I mean, he's exactly right. That's what happened. Nancy Pelosi does not want to talk about that. That's the fact of the matter. So I've seen, I don't know if any of you noticed, but there's been all these fact checks from USA Today and Washington Post and others on this whole thing. And what they'll say is that, oh, well, Nancy Pelosi has no control over the, you know, the Capitol Police. She's not head of the Capitol Police. She doesn't tell them what to do. And I'm like, okay, this is a clever fact check. Because while you're technically right, you're missing the point. What happened, it wasn't the Capitol Police's fault, to be honest. The Capitol Police asked the Sergeant of Arms of the House for more security, the National Guard and so forth, because there were threats coming in about January 6th. And so they called in, or they asked for that, and the Sergeant of Arms said no. And why? The Sergeant of Arms does report to Nancy Pelosi. So the Sergeant of Arms reports to Nancy Pelosi. I want to know why. Why they didn't want more security? Why they didn't ask for more security? I don't think it's a bad question to ask. Seriously. I don't think it's a bad question. Coming up next, Cameron Smith with AL.com columnist. He'll join us in the next segment on FM Talk 106.5. This is Yaffe filling in for Sean.
This is Midday Mobile with Sean Sullivan on FM Talk 106.5.
Midday Mobile. This is Yaffe filling in for Sean here on FM Talk 106.5. Really glad to be able to talk to the people of Mobile. Really glad to be here today. And joining me on the phone right now, someone that I have become a big fan of. As I mentioned earlier, I haven't been in Alabama too long, a little less than a year, but definitely one of my favorite columnists already. Cameron Smith, he's a columnist for AL.com. How are you, my friend?
Cameron's totally overrated.
not in my book, but if you want to say that, that's fine. Yaffe might be a little overrated, but Cameron, I did want to ask you. You were on with Dale Jackson earlier this week, and you had said something that interested me. You were getting a bunch of hate mail on vaccines and kids masking and so forth. Are you still seeing a lot of that?
Oh, yeah. I mean, I've had exchanges. They're available on social media. You can see them where folks have said, well, you know, what is the preferred number of kids you want to die? And obviously the answer is zero. I don't prefer any child dies, but I'm an adult and I can talk about this stuff in terms of risk profile and kind of what we're up against. And I ask questions like, what is the level of acceptable risk? We know, for example, and I use the flu. I'm not saying the flu and COVID are the same, but we know that there's a non-zero number of children who die every year from the flu. Should we enforce mask mandates because that number is not zero? And people are kind of all over the place on that. They're like, well, that's okay. It's different. It's not a pandemic. I said, well, if the number's close, at what point do we reach a threshold where we say you have to wear a mask indefinitely because this risk is unacceptable? And I get the answers all over the place, and that's the stuff I'm tired of. I just want folks to be consistent. Tell me what the number is of illness or death that we say we need to act upon, and the number of which it's below, so we can say, no, we can go back to normal.
I got to tell you, Cameron, a part of your question for them scares me, because I honestly believe that there are going to be some calling for this kind of stuff when there's a bad flu season, that we have set the precedent for this. This is what we do now, and they're going to do this with the flu too. Are you worried about that?
No, I'm not worried, because in America, folks have the right to have that perspective and say, no, actually, I believe children should always wear masks going forward because there's some risk. And I have the ability to say, you know what? There's some risk that's acceptable so that children don't have to wear masks and do stuff like that. And we're going to disagree on that, I understand, but that's how we work in a representative democracy. We elect people who make these decisions. But, yeah, I mean, I encountered a number of people who just say, if there's any risk, we should wear masks just because, you know, it's relatively low cost, relatively small, and, you know, it could save a life.
Now, isn't there other risks, though? I mean, this is my problem with, like, doing everything based on the experts, on the technocrats, is, yeah, they're going to look at it, and it's like, well, there's a slight risk, so we need to do this. But isn't there also a risk of masking children all the time, especially because children are messy and dirty themselves, and there could be other things that go wrong that's not related to COVID if they're all wearing a mask?
Yeah, the way I look at it is there, what are they there to do? Why are you in school? Well, you're there to learn, right? Most kids don't care, right? This, for them, they're like, hey, I'm putting on a mask. A lot of kids, though, it's a distraction. I know my son draws on the mask and does other stuff like that. And if that's something else for them to fidget with and things like that, does it have an impact on the learning process? That's what I actually am concerned about. But, you know, the idea that our goal as a society should be to mitigate all risk, I just don't share that. That's not where I am.
Yeah, I agree with that completely. It just seems like, though, you're right, that we feel like the government should prevent all risk. And you said you weren't worried about it because we make our own choices and that so forth. But I guess I'm just worried about some of this stuff being mandated. I mean, we're already seeing calls for vaccine mandates. Big companies in California like Google and Facebook are imposing their vaccine mandates. They're doing one on the federal level and government employees and some other places. What do you think about the push for vaccine mandates?
Well, I mean, I think the political fallout of forcing that, here's the deal. This has become so politicized, and everyone has it. This has been the widest publicized vaccination in the history of vaccines. And so people all have engaged it, have decided how they feel about it. And so the political fallout is going to be pretty harsh. You know, there are other vaccines like measles, mumps, and that folks have taken for years. They've been thoroughly studied. People kind of know what it is. And they're saying, okay, this is fine. And there's risk.
Cameron, you're breaking up a little bit. I'm sorry, Cameron. Can you repeat what you just said? You were breaking up a little bit there.
Oh, yeah. I was just saying that the big issue here is that we have vaccines that we've had for years, and there's not that much resistance to them from the public because we know they're safe. We've seen them tested, and we have that longitudinal data. In a couple of years, I think that'll be the way it is with the COVID vaccines. People will say, hey, we've seen what happens after a couple of years. We feel safer. A lot of the vaccine hesitancy at this point is from people, and I've talked to a lot of them, who say, you know what? I'm not anti-vaccine. This was done really fast, and even though folks are telling me it's safe, they can't even tell me how long it's going to last. They can't tell me when I might need another one. There's a lot of unknowns, and I don't feel comfortable. I can do whatever I want to assure them, but those people that are in that camp, they're not going to budge unless you make them, and if you make them, they're going to be mad.
Well, and that's the thing, and I guess I don't understand, why are we making them? I mean, what is the purpose of making them when the vaccine is available, and if you're vaccinated, you're pretty much protected, at least that's what the evidence shows, then what is the purpose of making them?
Yeah, and I think that's been my point all along, is that I just pulled up a CDC report. It's on my laptop because I'd like to use the CDC's data so that people can't say, well, you just cherry-picked a different data set. The CDC's data on breakthrough infections is pretty clear that if you're vaccinated, it was like, yeah, as of April, which is the last report they put out, there were like 10,000 breakthrough cases out of 101 million vaccines. So it's like 0.0001% chance that you're going to get sick. And even if you do, it's a mild version of what's going on.
I'm speaking with Cameron Smith. He is a columnist for AL.com. I definitely appreciate him joining us today. I did want to give you an opportunity as well to talk about another column that you posted this week. Has to do with dementia. What was that column about?
Yeah, this is when the stories run out. It's the story of my grandfather and what we're experiencing right now of a big Southern talker who my whole life has told me stories. And now he's sort of staring out into eternity. He doesn't recognize me. This is a story for a lot of people that should connect because a lot of us face that. There's somebody we love who has declining mental faculties because of age, dementia, whatever. And that person isn't who they used to be. It's really hard. And so one of the things that I did is just kind of shared that experience, explain kind of what I'm going through, and really just express gratitude to have those stories, to have those memories that I can look back on and say, man, now it's my turn to tell the stories. It's my turn to fill those shoes. It's certainly sad that he's gone, but I think, you know, as a column.
Cameron, I lost you. Cameron, you're breaking up again. Are you there?
Yes, yes.
Okay, go ahead and say that last point one more time. I'm sorry.
Yeah, I'm. Basically, people don't need to know, and it's okay to deal with losing someone this way, and that's just the story.
All right, Cameron Smith. He is with AL.com, columnist with AL.com. By the way, I don't always. I didn't tell you I was going to talk about this, but. Do you have any take on the Senate race so far, what you see from the Senate race so far? I just talked with Jessica Taylor in the last hour.
And, very interesting. I think you've got Mo Brooks, who wants to run the Tuberville playbook, say, I got the Trump endorsement. I can avoid debates. I can avoid any opposition. I'm by far the front runner. You've got a very experienced political operative in Katie Britt, who's saying, no, I'm going to go after retail politics. I'm going to run all over this state, and I'm going to try to earn votes and make a run at you because I think I can beat you. And you've got Jessica Taylor and some others, but I think those two are the two that I think are going to collide. And I hope Alabama gets to see an actual race. I hope that they have folks come out and talk about what they believe, what their plan is, where they want to go, because that just didn't happen really in the last Senate race. And frankly, I think it's a shame.
Well, I mean, and there was this report came out that Mo Brooks had on body armor when he spoke on January 6th in front of that rally, and Democrats are kind of mocking him for this. But I feel like every time the mainstream media comes out with a story like that, that it just helps him because he already has the name ID. It keeps him in front of the news. He's fighting against Democrats. Alabamians want a fighter. So I feel like it just helps him. What do you think about that?
Well, the body armor thing that you thought it was completely safe and innocuous while you wore body armor, that's a fair point. I don't think it's that big of a deal here. I think what is a bigger deal is he's clearly flip-flopped on a lot of this stuff. He's not the only Republican to do this, but to be very much against Trump, very much antagonistic, and then decides, hey, I can't beat this guy, I might as well join this guy. A full-on political swampy move. He's done that and been clear about that. I do think anytime the media attacks him for being a conservative, it certainly helps him. But the idea that and I've tested this. This notion of he's a fighter, well, what does that mean? Because to his name, the only thing he has done legislatively in terms of past legislation is a post office naming in his congressional career. Other than that, he's not been really active. So tell me where he fights, and then let's talk about that. And if I'm Katie, I'm bringing that one to the table and saying, okay, I hear the fighter rhetoric. What do you mean? If it's just I vote Republican, well, that's not super fighter.
Yeah, well, I mean, I do think the branding is interesting, though, because I've noticed the other candidates also claim they're the fighter. So I think Mo Brooks was on to something by trying to be a fighter, because obviously all the candidates believe that's what Alabamians want.
It's because they look at Trump, and Trump just punched people in the nose. I mean, you can't brand Trump as anybody. He likes fights, but in terms of taking those fights, you can point to specific things and say, Trump did this, Trump did that. Trump had in his presidency, a record of doing things that just took the, I guess, establishment Republicans and the swampy Democrats and said, hey, we're going to do this, and you don't like it, I don't care. That's what people kind of connected with and said, hey, that's important. But the problem is the politicians wanting to ride the coattails and say, well, me too. I'm a fighter. Well, tell me about that. Tell me what you've actually done, and then we'll talk. Otherwise, you are not the same as Donald Trump.
Do you think part of it is, though, that he's voted against a lot of things, like voted against a lot of Democrat things? Maybe he'll bring that up in his record? Because you bring up a good point. Yay. That what does he have to show for it positively? But
voted against Democrat things? Wow, that's crazy in Alabama. I mean, that's the thing that I get is, well, I'm trying to slow things down. Well, yeah, sure. But like most when Republicans are in power, guess what? They end up squandering the opportunities because they don't have a plan. They like the breaks. And I've said this time and time again. It's good. It's necessary. It's efficient, because we've seen, you know, I want somebody that can pull the people together, build the majority to advance a conservative agenda. If the game is, well, let's stop things that Nancy Pelosi does, that is important. But guess who's been winning a lot? It's been them. You need to be a legislator to undo that.
All right, Cameron Smith, AL.com columnist. Great points. I've become a big fan. Like I said, I appreciate you coming on the show. I'll talk to you again in the future, my friend. I really appreciate it.
Thanks, sir.
All right. And, you know, it's interesting he brings that up. Next time I talk with Stan McDonald, I talk to him on my show, Mo Brooks, I'll bring up that point to him and say that. I mean, the one thing that I really do like about Mo Brooks is even last year when Trump was pushing, you know, people to do that relief package, Mo Brooks voted against it. And that was something that Trump signed eventually. one of the last things he signed. And Mo Brooks voted against it. And I think that's part of it, is Mo Brooks will do some of the things like that, that maybe another politician just isn't willing to do. But there is also this issue of, okay, so what positive things can he get done? And that's the battle, because there's sort of an argument out there that you sometimes have to make the deals that seem establishment to get the stuff for the state. And Mo Brooks won't make those deals because he would prefer to stand on principle. So what are the voters going to prefer? Are they going to prefer the same, the Mo Brooks stand on principle, even if it doesn't get the stuff to Alabama? Or would they prefer a Kitty Boy Britt, who probably is a little bit more willing to make those deals, like a Richard Shelby, to get some of that stuff done? So we can take your calls and texts on this if you want. 251-343-0106. 251-343-0106. You are listening to Midday Mobile on Talk 106.5.
This is Midday Mobile with Sean Sullivan on FM Talk 106.5.
Welcome back to Midday Mobile. This is Yaffe filling in for Sean. Just a quick reminder, if you want to follow me on Twitter, you can at Michael Yaffe, spelled Y-A-F-F-E-E. Or you can the Facebook page as well. It was good conversation I had with Cameron Smith. I mean, we had some cell phone issues, but got the gist of most of what he was saying. I know cell phones are just talk radio's kryptonite in so many ways. It's good for talk radio in some ways and bad in some other ways. Let's go to the phones, though. Let's talk with Susan in Mobile, wants to talk about the mask mandate. Susan, what do you want to say?
Hi. I just don't think they're effective. And I'll listen to Brian Fisher. And they said on that show that, the virus can go through the mask, so I don't think it's all that effective. But I don't wear one, unless I absolutely have to, to get in the store or something. So.
So the mask mandates are kind of pointless in your regard because of that.
Yeah. And if we have the vaccine and that's supposed to protect us from the virus, why do we need a mask? So.
And Susan, I appreciate your call. Thank you so much. I mean, she's just asking what most everyday Americans are asking at this point. Seriously. Here's the thing with the mask. I was never anti-mask. And what I mean by that is, I think most people were upset at the masks because of what it represented more than what it actually is. Because it is just a piece of cloth and it's annoying and I hate it, but it's not the biggest inconvenience in the world, but it represented that control from the government. It represented the fear of the pandemic and control of the government, and it was just a stepping stone to other things. And I think for a lot of people, that made them uncomfortable. And that was the deeper reason why mask mandates just made them mad, other than the obvious that they're just annoying. But I will say this, when you look at masks, one, it depends on the mask. if you have an N95, obviously it's going to protect better. But really, if you have a cloth mask or something, yes, it will stop some of the water. If you sneeze or something, or if you, spit or something accidentally, it might stop some of that water droplets from getting on someone. But is it going to stop all of the air getting through, which the virus can be in because it's a respiratory virus? Obviously not, because you're still breathing. I'm not an expert. Apparently, the CDC has put out studies that show masks work, but all we have to do is look at the fact that when there were mask mandates, we had the worst spikes. One of those spikes was in Alabama. The worst spike we had was when we had a mask mandate. So this idea that mask mandates are the end all be all, it's silly. They're not magic. Maybe they help a little bit, but they're not magic. But it just all goes back to the fact that they just want to convince you that they're doing something. So Biden, he was campaigning on, on the 4th of July, where we're moving past the virus now. He wanted the 2022 midterms, and he wanted his legacy to be that we recovered from the virus and moved on. And all of a sudden there's a spike, and that makes Joe Biden look bad. So what does he want to do? They have to make it seem like, well, we got to do something. At least I was the president that did something. Doesn't matter if that something works or not. And unfortunately, this is what government does all the time. This is what government does all the time. It doesn't matter if there's results or if it works, as long as they're trying. Do something. Would somebody please think of the children? And that's a lot of what it is. And it's about control as well. Really appreciate you listening to the show. I'll be filling in one more time tomorrow. I appreciate Sean giving me the opportunity to do that. This is Yaffe. I really appreciate you listening on FM 106.5. I will talk to you guys again tomorrow. Thank you so much.